Yes. Very good morning. Yes, indeed, we are on a. We're all on a journey. I want to take you on a journey this morning, of some work that we've been doing in Africa. And yeah, God moves in mysterious ways. Huh? I'm blessed that in the 1980s, a certain Curly Karen came into my life. I was destined for. I'd been into some crazy exploration to that point, mountaineering. I'd got papers to emigrate to the Yukon in Canada. Lord knows what would have happened if that had gone through with that. But actually, I fell in love with Karen. We've been blessed with two beautiful children, and my life took a different direction altogether. I've been teaching, and I suppose once you're a teacher, you're always a teacher. And I've been teaching, and as part of that, I took youngsters to far-flung corners of the world, but eventually roots went headed to Africa. And things became very interesting when I took young learners and I took teachers, and then I took my church members to southern Africa, to the little mountain kingdom of Lesotho, surrounded by the Republic of South Africa, a small kingdom, about the size of Wales, 2.1 million people, one of the poorest countries in the world. And actually, things move you, and as I said, God works in mysterious ways. I was a deputy head teacher in Sheffield of a large school, and I felt the calling to actually give up that job and do this full time and establish a charity. And I said to Karen, "I think we need. I think this is what I'm destined to do." And I remember we sat. And many of you will know Peter Edwards from the Methodist circuit, and we sat and we held hands around our dining table, and we prayed, and this was the right way, and so was born Africa's Gift, a charity based here in Rotherham, but actually you can see from the logo there that there are hands surrounding the beautiful continent of Africa, which is massive and diverse, and I could choose to work with some seriously wealthy people, but I choose not to. I choose to work with the poorest people on the planet, some of the poorest in some of the poorest parts of the world. But actually, I've called the charity Africa's Gift because people associate Africa as a place where you go and give to, and you shower things on poor African community members. And what I've found is actually the community members that I work with are immensely rich, just not in material possessions. They're immensely rich in all manners of ways. And when I say, come to Africa, and they say, what can I bring? And I say, bring yourself. Bring yourself and you will receive Africa's gift. What is Africa's gift? People ask. And it is a sense, an overwhelming sense of community, of belonging, of priority, of humanity. And so that's what really sums up our charity. We are a charity that actually work in partnership with communities. So that's very easy to say, huh? That's not so easy to do. What do you do when you go to an African community? Well, it's kind of atypical for a man, especially a male teacher who likes to hear his own voice. But actually what you go and do is you go and use these things. God gave me two huge receptors. Do you see the size of my ears? They are. I had the biggest ears in my whole year group at school. You go and listen. You go and listen to need. Not once. You go and listen to the needs of a community. and see if there is something that you can do hand in hand, side by side, to address those needs. Next slide, please. I can get the next slide, please. Thank you. And one of the early things that we discovered as an educator, as someone who prioritizes education, is actually just getting young learners into education was massively important. And so we actually did a lot of building of schools, of school classrooms, of school houses for teachers, of scholarships, particularly for young girls who could not access education. A real division in gender equality in many parts of the poorest parts of the world. And so I love this picture. When I say this to young school kids, they just do not understand. They really think that I'm exaggerating. But these youngsters walk 2 hours to school. It's just extraordinary. And you actually have to see this. You have to get up and you have to be and you have to walk the walk. You seriously, Karen and I have been in the mountains and we've seen people running to school over 2.5 hours. They run to school. It's absolutely extraordinary. And education is hugely valued. I need to move on because I'm going to run out of time. Next slide, please, because I could talk all day. I've got to. So one of the things that we found is that actually, you know, it's basic human rights, and we can talk about the UN Charter for the Rights of Child. We can talk about human rights, all these declarations. I was at COP26, and I was red in the face at the hypocrisy. But actually, needs. What are the basic needs? A roof over your head, stability, peace in the family, if possible. And actually, the ability to actually feed yourself. And this is one of the things that we have been working so clearly on. If you look at this slide here, you can see a lady over an open fire. She's actually got corn on the cob, which has been ground into a flour. And she's pouring that into a pot and just stirring that pot. Next picture, please. To enable that to happen, you have got to have lots and lots of firewood. And that is often gathered by young girls and older ladies. And that is hard work, trust you. I actually took the National Young Farmers and I said, right, you're going to be a Basutu lady for a morning. And I said, we're going to carry wood. Next slide, please. We're going to carry wood. Next slide, please. We're going to carry wood and we're going to carry water. And when you cut the trees and you carry the trees away, then when it rains, this is the color of the water. So you actually have to go and look further afield at spring waters, which can be hours away. Next slide, please. The waters are so thick with sediment that it is a real challenge to grow crops. It is a real challenge to actually get just what you need for your daily meal. Next slide, please. And carrying this water, you can see there's nearly 10 litres of water in that bucket. That's 10 kilograms. That's over 20 pounds in weight on your neck. And I said to the National Young Farmers, do not carry 10 kilograms on your head. And of course, all the young ladies listened, and all the young men said, I can carry 10 kilograms. They put that on their head. The next day, they were all, oh, my back, my neck. But actually, joking aside, this is a huge task daily. So you actually, to cook, you actually have to go and harvest lots of biomass. You have to go and gather lots of water, and then you make fire. Next slide, please. And this is what a fire looks like. This is what is typical. And you can see that this biomass is green. It's not like a beautiful log cabin where you cut all the wood, you store it, you dry it, and you then just at your leisure bring the wood in. This wood has just been harvested. It's then been burnt. And typically, this is the lot for many, many people on the planet. I've got some statistics coming up shortly. But actually, if you look at this process, it is a process of drudgery. This is not leisure cooking. This is cooking where you have got beans that you've soaked overnight and you've put in a, you've washed and you've put in a pan that you've soaked overnight and then you bring to the boil. And the process is this, that you actually, you bring the pan to the boil and you can see the streaks down the side of this pan where it's boiled over. If it boils over and it boils dry, you have to start again. Your food is ruined. You have to attend this. You have to be at this fire. When you take the pan lid off to stir it, the steam goes up in the air. So does the micronutrients in your food. You have to stir. You then have to top it up with more water. Put the pan lid on, feed the fire, and repeat. And repeat. And repeat. And all the while you're doing that, all of the aspirations that you may have thought of, that may be imbued in you, that you dreamt of when you were at school, all of those just are not a reality because you are locked to this cooking fire. For 3.5 to 4 hours, the lady, and it's often invariably a lady, is locked to this cooking process. And all the while, she is ingesting really dangerous smoke. Next slide, please. This smoke, what is smoke? Smoke is unburnt carbon. That is the carbon in the wood that is not at a high enough temperature to burn, and so it's ingested. Next slide, please. And you can see very quickly that this smoke just completely envelops the cook. Next slide, please. I took this picture at dawn, and the breakfast fires just all melded together into this blanket of smoke. Next picture, please. I took this smoke inside a round house called a rondavel, which is a clay and earth building with a thatched roof. And you can see the smoke, and I took it without the flash, so you can see the sun streaming in and catching the smoke just sitting at the top of the house. Next slide, please. So I actually asked my students, go find me some statistics from the World Health Organization on death and illness from smoke. I did so in the year 2002. Those statistics are still relevant today. There is a death every 20 seconds. Can you believe that? A death every 20 seconds from nothing other than ingesting the smoke upon which people breathe from cooking their own meals. And that there are 2.6 billion people every day cook on an open fire. That's 1 in 3 people on our planet that actually cook every meal, every day, on an open fire. It is truly extraordinary. Smoke is the biggest killer of under fives in the world. Smoke is the biggest cause of blindness in the global south. Smoke is attributed to a lot of hearing loss also in the global south. And it's preventable. And what's extraordinary is that this crazy little thing that looks like a cat basket is part of the answer. Next slide, please. We have had the privilege, I have had the privilege of introducing over the last decade and a little more, a cook bag, which is actually insulation. It's a bag full of insulation. It's just like your big duvet. It's exactly the same principle as the hay box that some people may be familiar with post-war, whereby you actually bring your food to the boil. And once that food is boiled, you then take the hot pan and you place the hot pan inside the bag. You put this on top and then you just lock the pan inside the bag. Oops. And there we go. You lock the pan inside the bag. And this is the beautiful thing. The cook says, what do I do now? And we say, whatever you would like to do for the next 3.5 to 4 hours, every day. What's the other thing that's amazing is that as soon as you take the pan off the fire to put it in here, you put the fire out. So you use a tiny, tiny amount of wood. You also only use the water that you put in the pan. None of it boils away. So all of the nutrition in the food is trapped in the pan. So nutritionally, it is massively improved. But what's amazing is actually you're able to go, and I'm a bit of a showman, and I go and I say, hey, can I come and cook with you? And typically, it's a big African mama, and she'll say, what? You cook? Yeah, you can't cook. I say, yes, let me come and cook. Let me come and cook. And I'm gonna cook your beans with these 4 sticks and this bag. Next slide, please. And it's been an immense privilege. Because what we do is we go and work with the community. And we say, right, I'm gonna guide you, right? Am I right? This is how you cook your beans. Well, let me get you to cook your beans as normal. If it doesn't work, I'll buy you more beans, because there's always skepticism. And so the lady cooks the beans, and I said, right, now instead of, now that it's boiling, I said, instead of continuing to boil, put the pan in the bag and lock the bag shut. And then we're gonna go away, and we're gonna come back in 4 hours' time. And in that 4 hours, promise me that you do not touch, you don't peek. Because we're very nosy humans. We want to go and peek. And we said, don't peek. We'll come back in 4 hours and let's test the pan. The pan is piping hot. And people just are in disbelief. And then they open the pan and the food is perfectly cooked. And that's the transformation. And what then happens is we then go and do demonstrations in more and more communities, and the word of mouth spreads, and people start to actually get access to this bag. Now, what's important is that actually this bag is financially accessible. There's no point going into a community and saying, we've got this wonder cook bag, but actually it is way too expensive for you to purchase. And that's where I've got my charity, where we get people to donate to actually support the purchase of that bag, because we don't believe in giving them away for free, because that is the big I am. That is, here you are, poor person, and you're feeling that, you know, and it's really, really, really unpleasant. We believe in dignity. We need a purchase, and a conscious purchase, so someone is actually recognizing that this is of value, and that they realize that it's actually subsidized by an organization or an entity that actually makes it affordable. And that's what we've been fortunate to do. Next slide, please. And I've actually brought groups of different ages, from primary school kids to secondary school kids to university students, church members to university to third age groups. Age is no limit. There's no restriction. We actually come and we work together. We come and we introduce this cook bag. And why I'm talking to you, but I've done a myriad of other things. We've actually got a teaching farm. We've done lots of stuff on education. But actually this single interaction is the biggest impact, because it is the catalyst for actually reducing time poverty. And if you are poor in time, you have not the opportunity to put your skills to use. If every day you are actually harvesting wood, you're harvesting water, and you're stirring beans over a fire and making fire, then that's the majority. That's 6 or 7 or 8 hours of your day already gone. And you can't leave it because it'll burn dry. It'll boil dry. So now we actually have these bags in place. In 2018, I was too close to this, and I said, I need to step back and I need somebody to come and objectively assess impact. So I got the master students from the University of Sheffield Hallam University to come and assess impact. And we designed a questionnaire, and it was all very hard-nosed and analytical. And I said, no, I want the first question to be open and fluffy. And how are you getting on with the cook bag? And then we sent them off with an interpreter. Next couple of slides, please. Let's see if there's a picture here of... I'll come to Tabby Singh's story. I'll come back to Tabby Singh's story in a moment. Just one minute. Next one, if we go forward. Here we are. This is actually the survey taking place. And the university students, the 23, 24-year-old, really bright young things, all in little groups of 3 and 4, they all came back. And we had a session in the evening, and I said, how did you get on? And they all started bursting into tears. And they were saying, this lady here, and just showed a picture on their little phone, saying, this lady here said, thank you for giving me my life back. My life before this bag was one of just cutting wood, harvesting water, carrying and stirring beans. And Tabby Singh, we knew that actually there were the young learners who couldn't go to school because it was their role to actually put the meal on the table. Tabby Singh from Ribbeneng in Mohalisuk district of Lesotho was one such student. And we said to her, right, if your job is to put the meal on the table, then let's do it at breakfast with you. So we went in and we actually got a cook bag for her, and she cooked breakfast for the family, but then she cooked the evening meal at the same time, put it in the bag, went to school on a trial, came back, the meal was ready. And now wouldn't you believe it, she's actually one of the highest performing students at the school because she's grasped that opportunity to get education. And it has made such a huge difference. Next slide, please. This is Maimantame, and she actually is the lady that said, thank you for giving me my life back. And you know, when someone says that, and other people, I've actually got this survey being collated right now. Some of the comments are extraordinary. But it's then when you say, well, what are you now doing with your time? And you know, a lady can do whatever she wants to. If she wants to go and paint her nails, she wants to read a book, she wants to go and pray, she wants to go, whatever, that is perfectly beautiful. But often African ladies will actually put that time to making crafts. Oh, there's a seamless shift here to my store at the back of the church. So there are some beautiful crafts that people have done because they've got the skills. And actually, when you go and you say, what have you done with your time? And people show you the crafts. You know, you must buy the crafts. And when you say, I'd like to buy your crafts, and they say, how many? And I say, I'd like to buy them all. You know, and the lady bursts into tears, and you burst into tears. It's just beautiful. But actually, next slide, please. You know, the Mountain Kingdom's a small thing, and actually, when you drop a stone in a pond, the ripples do eventually get felt elsewhere. And while we were there, we got a call, the king wants to see you. And you're, oh, okay. And we said, are we going to the palace then? And he said, no, the king and queen would like to see you in their back garden. This is how intimate it is. The king is the guy with the lampshade coming out of his head in the blue jacket there. And Her Majesty is just next to him in the black coat. But actually the king was saying, look, you know, what you're doing is actually being felt elsewhere throughout this kingdom. I encourage you to do more. I encourage you to do more. And I've got the support of my wife, Karen, and I've got the support of my church, I've got the support of my community to actually do more. And that's where that's where I'm at. Next slide, please. And so I've actually been taking groups to far-flung corners. This is actually in Zambia with a cook bag. Next slide, please. I've actually even taken it up to the summit of Kilimanjaro, where we actually showed that you can actually cook even in the freezing cold. And it was beautiful because we actually cooked our evening meal at breakfast. And we climbed up the mountain. I'm saying we. This is the royal we. I walked up the mountain, and we have. You're only allowed to climb Kilimanjaro if you have guides and porters. So the porters were carrying the food. So I said, well, let's carry the food, not dry, but actually let's have carry the food in the pan, and it'll be cooking as we get to the camp. And we got to the camp 8 hours later. It was hilarious. 8 hours later, and 1,000 meters further up the mountain, 3,000 feet further up the mountain each day. I got to the camp and I said to the porters, I said, be careful, this pan will be hot. And they were looking at me. Yeah, and it's a very macho environment climbing Kilimanjaro. There's all the porters and cooks are male, and they're all carrying big gas bottles and grills and so on. And I'm here with a little puffy bag. And I said, be careful when you open the bag. They opened the bag, and this man put the back of his hand on the pan. I went, oh! And he and then what happened? He actually said, come. And he encouraged others to come and burn the hand. And I said, stop! I said, stop, this is ludicrous. I said, open the pan lid and see the food. And we'd cooked a beautiful beef stew, and it was beautifully cooked. The meat was soft and tender. All the nutrients of the veg were in there, and we said, look, this is our evening meal. It's cooked. No need for it. So we're actually going back to Kilimanjaro, all being well, in December of this year, and with the film crew, and we're actually going to show how we can decarbonize the climbing of Kilimanjaro. Next few slides, I'm conscious of time. There's a crazy one here. I'm going to come on to some statistics here. So I'm going to just tell you that I'm a doctor. So trust me, I'm a doctor, because they made me a doctor of education, the university, an honorary doctorate. And actually, just at the turn of the year, I also got an MBE from the Queen. But Karen and I are going to have to get dressed up posh and go down to Buckingham Palace and something. But actually, you know, I'm mindful that it's not what people think of you and say about you. It's your actions that define who you are. So I'm not getting lost in that. But let me just say that, trust me, I'm a doctor. I'm going to come on to some statistics. Next one, please. And actually, you know, there's, as I mentioned, I was at COP26. And I was dressed as a Basutu. I was dressed in a big blanket with a funny hat on, and I'm saying SOS, because actually we are ruining the planet here. We are actually responsible for climate change. Look at this oil consumption around the world. Look how tiny Africa, the whole continent of Africa's oil consumption is in comparison to the rest of the world. Next slide, please. This is what everybody's talking about, CO2, this greenhouse gas. This is what 1 ton of CO2 looks like. I wonder if you know how many you are responsible for in your homes, in your day-to-day life. Because this is the big challenge, and this is the big challenge that globally we have got to address. Many, many poor people in the developing countries, the global south, are not responsible for anything like the amount of emissions that we are, and yet they are suffering from the soil erosion that you've just seen. They're suffering from lack of harvests, they're suffering from droughts, they're suffering from floods. Their whole weather pattern has changed. That's why we've got a teaching farm in Lesotho also. It's huge. Next slide, please. So we, each of us, are responsible for 10 of those balloons of CO2 going into the sky each year. If you're an American, it's twice that. And if you live in the Saudi areas, then it's actually quadruple that. So actually, what can we do about it? And actually, if we say nothing, and then we bury our heads in the sand, then we are actually not protecting our children's future. We're not protecting God's creation. This is not natural. Next slide, please. And so what I've actually done, and during the lockdown period, you think long and hard. I actually created a new company to work side by side with Africa's Gift. And the ambition is to make millions of these. I want to make millions of these. That's what I want to do in my next decade of work in life. I want to bring local communities together. It is replicable. I actually want to make these out of local materials. And it's not just confined to Africa. I'm actually going, and it sounds great, and I'm looking forward to it, I must say, but I'm actually going to St. Kitts and Nevis this time next week to actually make cook bags like this. This is actually made out of coconuts. Can you believe? Inside of here is the coir that you might see on an outdoor mat. That coir, it's a bit like my beard. It's wiry, it's ginger, a gingery color. It's a bit like my beard as well, only it's gone a little bit gray now. And this, it's the stringy stuff that's on the outside of the coconut that is the husk that protects it, that we're working and making these. In Lesotho, we're making them from mohair and wool, and also from hemp, which is part of the new industry. And we're actually getting local people making these bags. And my company is actually going to be a 4-share company, but everybody that's involved in it will be shareholders. So it's a shared wealth company. And we are actually going to, my ambition is to get funding and to get investors and actually get this company scalable across many different places. I'm already making bags in Tanzania, St. Kitts, and in Lesotho, and we've got interest from elsewhere, and we're looking to scale that. Next slide, please. And this is what it's about. Just if you can actually create fiber like this, this is hemp fiber from the stalks of agricultural plants. We can actually put that into the bag and trap in the heat. Next slide, please. And here is a bag being made in beautiful materials in the mountain kingdom of Lesotho. Next slide, please. And really, it's not high tech. What you need is one person who is actually adept at sewing, one person who can actually process the material, and somebody that's good at marketing. And then you've got a viable way of actually transforming someone's lives and dramatically reducing your carbon footprint. Next slide, please. And so we've actually bought industrial machines. Often the rag trade is the domain of the Indian community, and it's been great going in and bartering with the community members and saying, look, I need a good price for this. We're on an interesting project. Next slide, please. And this is where we're actually making the cook bag in Lesotho at an eco lodge. I first visited this lodge in 2000. I brought the first solar panels to the community in 2002, and now it runs entirely on solar power. So it's off the grid, running completely on solar energy. Next slide, please. So if you are able to help, I would be very interested to hear. If you know of anybody that has got way more money than they need, then point them in my direction, because actually I can actually show them that there is a real return, there's a real social, environmental, and potentially a financial return on investment in this green, new green company. Next picture, please. Yeah, next picture, please. And because we got, I'm conscious that we are talking a lot. Can I take the next picture, please? Next picture. There we are. One way that you may be able to help is actually by doing a shoe collection. I take shoes to Africa. I actually export shoes to Africa. I physically take black school shoes to Africa to actually enable youngsters to go to school, such as the legacy of the empire, that actually many, many schools only allow youngsters to go to school if they're in school uniform. And so we actually, they require black school shoes, and that's often a financial hurdle which is too great. So I actually prioritize the black school shoes that we take physically to the Mountain Kingdom of Lesotho and to some of the township areas of informal settlements of South Africa. But we take all manner of footwear, and all manner of footwear actually get sorted. And next slide, please. And they go to Ghana in West Africa, and they're cleaned, they're mended, and they're actually put on sale, and we get some revenue from that. And I've actually followed the shoes all the way through, from sorting in the UK to the end markets in Ghana. And there's a strange phrase here, but our shoes have enough value in them to employ 48 people along the chain of sorting and preparation and wholesale trade to retail. 48 people are uplifted from that. Next slide, please. The other thing that you can do is, this is a win-win scenario. You can actually write a little message on here, or a prayer on here, or a dedication to someone who's just passed on here. And this tree tag we will take to a community. And it's got a hole in it, and we'll tie some string on it, and we'll hang it up on a display in the community hall or in the church. And for every tree tag that we get, we actually plant a real tree in an area which is protected and staffed by people. So the trees don't just get planted, they actually grow. And this has been a very successful way of people in the north actually offsetting some of their carbon that they're responsible for, and actually helping the people in the south, because often we plant fruit trees that are actually of value also. Next slide, please. I'm just going to leave you with some images then that show just how blessed we are to be born where we are. Huh? We're all God's children, and actually just the circumstances of our birth determine our life experiences and our life's challenges. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. We've got some of these at the back. These are our Angels for Angels. If you can, or you know anybody that can be an angel investor to actually help us scale the growth of the bags, then these little angels come for free. If you're like me, financially a little challenged, then you can maybe buy one of these for £3 for Christmas next year. Next slide, please. Yeah, next slide, and I'll stop there. Yep, that's good. Okay, I mean, I don't know if it's appropriate. If anyone has got questions, maybe we can take questions at the end when we're breaking out. And I think I saw coffee at the, that was being sort of a little later. So, or if there, if anyone has any questions now, I'm more than happy to answer any questions.